Welcome to Your Mom is a Podcast. In this special podcast,
Your Mom's a Podcast.
Here we interview incredible people and their moms to be like, excuse me, how did you do it?
I'm Sundeep Parikh, you're
Milana Vintra.
And we're both two LA-based comedians and actors, and we're also new parents, and we need help.
So we're going to talk to people who are incredible and inspiring and change the world, crack us up, all of the above.
And learn to be better parents, and also learn to have some compassion for our parents.
Yeah, who maybe did some things a little wonky or a little perfect, because look at us, we turned out to be perfect people.
So welcome to Your Mom is a Podcast. My little one has recently started swearing.
Fun.
But like in the most fun way. And and like they're not even like the big ones, but
what are they?
He just randomly the other day said, he like hit something or whatever, and he's like, damn it. And then later I like listened more carefully, and what he was actually saying, which I love so much, is bam it. And so
which makes so much more sense, actually.
It does make more
sense.
Because
you made a bam.
You made a bam, and you bam it. Bam it all.
Bam it all to Bell.
It sort of just starts to beg the question of, if he starts dropping an F-bomb,
how do you respond?
See, okay, this is my personal thing is like, caring about swearing is a little bit old school. Like, I don't think I care. I swear a ton, and I have fun swearing.
And it doesn't harm anybody. The only people that it harms are the people that are offended by it.
Right. But swearing at somebody to be mean to them is different than just being like, it, you know, or
totally.
Something like that. Like, you know, that's not being mean. So to me, I'm like, there's that. It's just some like weird hoity-toity kind of control thing that we have.
And if anything, he's going to do it anyway. And then
he's just going to
be a secret that he keeps.
That's right.
I don't swear at home, but I swear with my friends because my friends are cool and they let me do it. And
that's
so
right.
Why not let him talk the way that he talks? I do think teaching him that some words have a weight to them, and that and some of those words hurt people's feelings, and then potential history of some of those words could make him genuinely feel different about them. But yeah, then it's a conversation.
But in the meantime, while not thinking about that, please subscribe to us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast to find out when new episodes come out, because we love having you here and we love doing this, and this is how it helps us to keep doing more.
Okay, our guest today is the incredibly inspiring cutie patootie of a soul, Chris Lennertz. I mean, not that he wasn't a cutie patootie, but the guy's
a cool mohawk.
Soul. He did have a hot little mohawk, but his
hot hawk.
His heart, and maybe it's like the Italian man thing. Maybe, you know, that
He loves his mother.
I could sense him loving his mother, loving his family, and the joy that he gets from making people happy. I really picked up on that.
And it turns out he's also
got a cutie little soul.
A cutie little soul in Mohawk.
Chris Lennertz is an Emmy-nominated and Grammy Award-winning composer for film, television, and video games. After winning 20 BMI awards.
That's too many.
That's an obscene amount. You should be ashamed of yourself for that.
Illegal. Should be illegal.
Chris was named a BMI icon at the 39th annual BMI Awards for his significant contributions to the music community and exceptional work across film, television, and gaming. Boo. Boring. Do something that matters. His TV credits include The Boys, which is actually my favorite show, maybe in the past decade, Supernatural, Agent Carter, and Lost in Space. Additional credits are things like Bad Moms, also great, great film, Horrible Bosses, Ride Along, Sausage Party, and other TV shows for Amazon and Netflix. And who cares? You're super impressive. We get it. The thing that I find personally most impressive is actually the amount of philanthropy and nonprofit work that you've done. Because, you know, one of the reasons Sundeep and I started this podcast is to figure out how amazing people got that way. And some of it is we're learning. Some of it is because you were raised to be a certain kind of person. And then there are other societal factors and friends and just the inherent self that is you. But the thing that I find really cool is that you serve on the Board of Education through music and Mr. Holland's Opus Foundation, as well as Hands Together Haiti, where you launched the Symphony of Hope Project, a collaboration of more than 25 leading film and TV composers and dozens of award-winning musicians and vocalists joining together to rally the film music community and supporting Haiti following the 2010 earthquake.
Yeah, but like how many awards did he win for those?
Yeah, that's
true. Did he get to 20?
If like, he didn't win any awards,
I don't
is
know.
There anything to even be proud of? Like, what do you post about on social media, you know?
Yeah.
Cats.
Cats. Okay, well then.
Just cats.
That's huge.
Chris, welcome to our show. We are obviously in awe of you, even though we will tease you about it, mainly because we're just jealous. And we had the best time talking to your mom, your cutie, sweetie mother.
Isn't she?
She is. So just to ask you right up the bat, like how much of an effect, you know, I'm always curious about like, again, how you got that way. So like how much of your upbringing versus how much of your socialization do you think made you who you are?
Oh, well, my mom's 100% Sicilian. So that means that it's almost all her fault. No, her and my dad both. But yes, we had a super close family and they were both teachers, which I think is incredibly important. And will absolutely, it's very easy to connect the dots why the charity, many of the charities that I'm most involved with are education charities. Because between the two of them and a couple of amazing teachers that I had growing up, I just realized that that's how you change lives.
Hugely impactful things that you've done for folks. And yes, like you say, it started with your parents. So why don't you start by telling us about your mom specifically? Like, how would she describe herself, do you think?
So my mom would absolutely undersell herself a billion times over, as I think most moms do. Mm-hmm. But my mom, yeah, my mom is about 5 foot tall, but has a good 6 or 7 feet of heart and personality that goes with that. And she, like I said, she's an Italian mom. Now, what Italian moms do is they spend every waking hour making sure that everyone around them is happy. Mm-hmm. That's what they do. Yeah. That's their job. Whether that means a full tummy of really delicious pasta or help with your homework or making sure that there's, you know, an extra box of tissues if somebody dumped you or whatever. That was my mom. My mom was absolutely that way. I think that's partly an Italian mom thing. I think it's partly an East Coast small town thing. But yeah, she would probably describe herself as, you know, a nice lady, you know, something very understated like that.
Okay.
Whereas if you asked any of her friends or children, they would all tell you that she's the nicest lady on the planet.
Oh,
so Chris, this is how this show works. So we, you know, I did a pre-interview with your mom. And we actually asked her that question to describe herself. And now we're going to play that back. And should you match her answer, you end up getting a gold star for that. Okay. Yeah. So you're collecting gold stars. They're not important at all. We want to get to the truth of how you became you. But, you know, there's a consolation prize of just knowing that you're maybe one of the top ranked guests of all time if you can collect enough gold stars. But we'll find out.
In case all of the awards haven't done it for you.
Yeah.
You really want to get...
It's obvious you're very reward driven. So so right now we're going to find out, what did your mom say?
I grew up personally about 30 miles north of Boston in a very Italian community. So right there you can see where there's that. And I did a little of that with my kids, so I fought against that overpowering motherliness that I received, which was mostly positive, but could be suffocating. Anyhow, Chris was born in 1972 after Jim and I were married in 1970. I had a teaching degree and, you know, preschool to elementary and stayed home with the kids. And I'll tell you, there were two others besides Chris. And during those formative years, and then did some teaching, maybe 25 years, and ended up on the preschool level, which I loved, and ended up co-directing a preschool program in Pennsylvania.
Never once did I hear her refer to herself as a nice lady.
No, didn't hear nice lady.
Mm. She did say Italian.
She'd say Italian.
Sure.
That's true. So sorry, sure. No gold star for you, but damn. still sounds like you got a pretty cool mom.
Yeah. So, you know, you win some, you lose some.
And I knew she'd undersell.
She totally did. I did some casual social work. If I ever did any social work, it would be the only thing I talk about at every party forever.
Exactly.
And so then what part of herself as an educator is something that she worked to instill in her children?
Yeah, the truth is that she's incredibly empathetic, and I think she became that way because she noticed early on with her work with kids that every kid is different and learns a different way and also probably struggles with different things. And if you encourage what they are good at and what they're interested in and what they want to learn about, I think that's when she realized she was getting somewhere with a kid, especially if they were troublemakers or, you know, behavior, if they had behavior issues, it was always the one, like, she would find that thing that would connect her to them. And then that would turn them around a little bit.
I love that. Let's hear what your mom said.
We lived in a college community where, as you might imagine, education was very important. You know, the kids went through public education in sort of a city school, and encountered a whole lot of different types of youngsters. We encouraged, you know, we brought them places, museums, and, you know, encouraged them in whatever capacity, and encouraged them and tried to get some sports in there too, and theater and art and music.
Sounds like she was a broadly encouraging, not specifically encouraging, but just, you know, what is your memory of, like, when did you start showing an interest in music?
Well, I definitely started showing an interest in music probably at the end of elementary school. I think I wrote my first song when I was 5, and I started playing trumpet when I was like 8.
No way.
Because I had actually gone to see a nightclub band with my mom and her brother, my uncle, who was dating the lead singer, and they had a trumpet player. And I was like, ooh, let me try that. Ooh. And then I did about 4 years of trumpet until I heard Hot for Teacher in 1984 when that Van Halen album came out. And then I immediately put down the trumpet and took $50 and went to Sears and bought a guitar. And that was sort of the end of that. But yeah, that was sort of where I discovered music. And, you know, and the great part was she was very encouraging of that.
When do you think that your mom discovered your talent for music? When did she notice?
I think it was probably right away. My mom, to a fault, is, you know, is definitely one of the people who would be like, oh my God, you played a note. That's the greatest thing I've ever heard.
Right.
So she's definitely, yeah, she's like, that was brilliant. They were relentlessly encouraging, as she mentioned. And I don't think it took her long. I think the second I probably made any sort of squeaky noise out of the trumpet, she's like, my kid's going to be
He's a trumpet genius. Player
or something. I definitely think there was a lot of encouragement. And that's what they really were with everything, whether it be sports or music or whatever. And she really was incredibly encouraging. Sometimes to the point of us obviously being like, yeah, we're actually not that good at that. But but that's okay.
Well, we actually asked her when she noticed. So let's hear her answer.
I think he was 7 years old when he wrote his first piece of music.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And he was, I don't know, they had to do something in school, obviously, maybe draw a picture or, you know, write a poem. And he wrote a song and, you know, plunked it on the piano.
That's so great. Can I ask even about that, like, 5 or 7-year-old Chris that sat down to write a song because maybe it was an assignment or maybe it was something that you were curious about? But, like, what was the drive there? Were you just curious about it? And it was like, you know, for me, it was always drawing. Like, that was just the way that I passed time. Was that what music was like for you?
I think that first one, I think it was for a contest. So it was probably a school
so
contest.
So there was an award involved.
There
Classic
was an award
Chris.
Involved. Yes, I was going to say there was an award involved. And I think it's interesting because that's one of the that might be one of the things that she would tell you. And it's probably why I've been in therapy for so many years. but like, as, you know, not just because I'm from California now, but I did often write for either an assignment or an award or for an ensemble in school, or I wrote because I was trying to like get this girl to go out with me or because someone broke up with me and I was heartbroken. And I think that that explains like what film composers do. And it's sort of why I end up, you know, everyone always says, well, do you just write when you have nothing to write about? And I don't, like, I don't want to do that. I'd rather go skiing. I write when I have something that I have mm-hmm. to write about, and whether it's because it's a job or whether it's because it's something like emotionally
right.
that I have to write this so I can process whatever it is that's going on, or it's something on screen that's inspiring me. I wouldn't necessarily write a symphony just in the middle of a concert hall. Like I love having things that sort of tell me what to write, and whether that's emotion. I think that's maybe what you're talking about there.
So you need to be fed by something to, like, there needs to be a seed planted.
Yes.
for you to work off of. Yeah, I think that's probably true for a lot of creatives. Like, you know, heartbreak drives you, but then also collaboration really drives me. I mean, I only ever want to collaborate. So, that makes a lot of sense.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
Life can always use more Cedar Point. And right now, you can get more Cedar Point for less with the Fun Day Bundle for just $74.99. Each bundle gets you admission, parking, and all-day dining for one low price. That means more coasters like Steel Vengeance and more nostalgic fun in the boardwalk area. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Another question we asked your mom is, was there anything specifically happening at home that influenced you to go into the arts?
I would say two things. One is that neither one of my parents were in the arts professionally. So I think there was a little bit of like doing my own thing, because I knew I didn't want to necessarily go and get a PhD and you know, write a dissertation and become a professor. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, my dad was the most like insane ham comic, funny, bad dad joke telling musical theater lover ever. So we would drive from Pennsylvania to Boston to see my grandfather, or to Chicago to see his mom. And, you know, the whole time on the way there, it would sort of go back and forth between Motown and doo-wop and folk music. And then all of a sudden, like, Evita would come on, or Les Mis, or something like that. And he would always become Javert or whatever that music was, or Grease. You know, he would always, you know, sing all the parts from Grease, like, as loud at the top of his lungs. And he would even do the Lafayette College plays, where if they needed like an older character, they would be like, all right, well, we'll get Professor Leonard's to come do the, you know, the stodgy principal or something. And then he would, of course, turn on the juice. Yeah, he has never met a stage or potential for being in the spotlight like that that he didn't love. And so I definitely had that growing up. Mm-hmm. I had a dad who loved musical theater, who loved singing loudly, no matter what the song was, and being a complete ham. And so I think that's probably that, and the idea of like, okay, well, I'm going to take that further. I'm going to make an actual career out of that. I think that's that's where
I love
from.
That. That really gives me a lot of hope for my hamminess, because I have such a ham bone, and you know, look. And so for my kid, I'm like, oh man, I'm gonna embarrass the crap out of this kid. Yep. But maybe it'll drive him to become a Grammy Award winning musician. Who knows?
I just wonder if, you know, your grandparents had encouraged your dad to follow his artistic ambition, who he would have been. I think it's like, it's such a gift that your parents gave you that so that you could do the thing that you love professionally. And it's true that for older generations, and, you know, even your parents' friends did this, there was just not that same kind of encouragement in the arts. It was considered a very like brave, bold, and risky thing to do. And so your dad continued his love for it, even though he wasn't able to pursue it professionally.
Yeah, I don't know if his parents did. My grandfather on my mom's side, and this might be, you know, one of the things I'm sure my mom mentioned, like he was a singer. He was a great, like, you know, he sang crooner style, like Tony Bennett and Sinatra. And he always set up, he would always, like when we were driving, you know, I remember him telling me, he's like, oh, I wish I would have kept singing. When he got out of the army, he got married and he ended up joining the family business and doing the what he was supposed to do. But he always said, you know, he really missed it and he wished that he had kept singing. And he would sing at weddings and stuff like that after, but never professionally. But I did always, you know, I think my love of jazz came from him. And that's what I remember very distinctly, is that, you know, he definitely had some regret in his voice because he didn't keep singing. And he had made like two albums before World War II in Boston, tiny little, you know, records that
wow,
he did
it on his own.
And so I do. Yeah. So we do have.
Do you have those? Like, have you heard those records?
I think someone has them. I think my uncle has them. There's only like one copy and he's got them right now.
Oh man.
But I need to get them.
Got to digitize those.
I know. But I do have, like, he co-wrote his march for his battalion or regiment in World War II.
Wow. So
and we have sheet music for that, like framed, that says, you know, lyrics by Fred Teresi. And it's the march of his battalion. So I definitely had a little bit of that coming from them.
So your grandfather's music basically won us the war, is what you're trying to say?
Pretty much. Absolutely. Okay. 100%. I think you're right. I think a little bit of that I might have gotten from my grandfather. And I think I also got it modeled in a good way from my dad. I know this is the mom podcast, but I will say he went to Harvard Law School and got out. And 2 years after getting out of Harvard Law School, decided he didn't want to be a lawyer anymore and he wanted to be a teacher. And so he went back to school for 4 more years and got tons of more student loans to take a huge pay cut because he decided he really liked teaching. And so I did see that. And I remember very much in high school going like, "What? You're crazy. Why did you do that?" And it's obvious now. I'm like, oh, okay. Because he liked what he did, you know, when he was working. And I definitely think that lesson came through loud and clear. And my mom was supportive of that. So obviously that was loud and clear too, you know. And I'll say that, you know, I'm hoping I'm modeling now, because, you know, my 15-year-old is at a boarding arts high school as a musical theater major at 15, and just sang a solo that made me cry my, you know, sloppy tears. And, you know, we just made a movie together. And
with your 15-year-old?
That's amazing. I think you are modeling behavior, good behavior, if you're making a movie together. Before we jump into the details on that, because I think we're going to have stuff about your children, I do want to get to the answer that your mom gave here about, you know, what was happening at home. Let's see if she answered. Was it your dad's operatic singing?
Hmm. Both my father and Jim's father were very musical. My father a little more overtly, though they both have a lot of talent. I mean, I played the piano, Jim played the accordion for a short while. But my father, who has kind of the personality of Jim, of Chris, and Chris, hmm, he, very outgoing and very, you know, very Sinatra-ish, you know. he wrote music and he performed at clubs. And, you know, I think his influence was probably the most on Chris as far as the music goes.
All right. Ding, ding, ding. She calls out the grandfather specifically here. So, yeah, giving you the gold star.
Yes, I got one.
I think we should go to the answer to number 5, where, you know, Chris, you talked a little bit about your dad changing careers. And so I just want to, I just want you to hear what your mom said about the kind of values that she tried to instill in you.
We kind of allowed the kids to follow their passion and to follow their love and to encourage that. You know, and I was nervous about Chris entering music because, you know, it could go many different ways. But, you know, we both, Jim and I, felt like, you know, he'll find it out on his own. Because Jim himself, I mean, he's a perfect example. He went to, after going to Boston College, he went to law school at Harvard, actually. And then, you know, when we were first married, I said, you don't seem happy with your work. And he says, I'm not. He says, I always wanted to be a teacher. And we just thought, oh, going to do it now before kids. And that's in fact what he did. He changed his whole life, our whole lifestyle, and, you know, got, granted, he got a PhD at Penn and did very well, but loved teaching. He was a fabulous teacher and he followed his dream. And I think, you know, we thought, hey, why not?
I think there are a lot of stars here that we forgot to mention. So a few stars.
What do you want to give? How many?
I think there's two stars here at least, if not
two more
two
stars.
And a half. Yes.
I'm just giving them out like BMI
and
awards.
And I think actually one of anyone gets one.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I think I think I actually get one star for the follow-up question about your grandfather. So that's where the half point gets. I get half a point too.
All right, we'll give him Alana a star.
Happily. Happily. and I have to just like give a little bit more detail because it's such a joke around our family. My mom wasn't just nervous about me becoming a musician. My mom had the same reoccurring nightmare after so they dropped me off at USC freshman. And we had never been to California before. I didn't even come visit before I said, yes, I'm going here. So the week that, you know, 2 days before orientation, you know, we had sort of gone to some of the places around LA that, that you go when you're not from here. And then they moved me into the dorms, and I found out later that the entire trip when my mom was here, after we had gone to Venice Beach, she now had this reoccurring nightmare of me as like, you know, an older, you know, destitute person with like a set of bongos and a hat. And I was just like, that was my life. And she was going to have to come help. She would come and put money in my hat because I had no money, and she would have to support me. So she had this reoccurring nightmare of me playing bongos on Venice Beach for the remainder of my career.
Yeah. What a relief that once in a while, mother's intuition isn't right.
But who knows? Maybe you can fulfill her dream someday of playing bongos on Venice Beach just for funsies.
yeah, bring her nightmare to life.
Yeah, bring her nightmare to life. I think it'll be a fun little prank.
We did ask your mom, is there a moment where you made her proud?
I would say younger, it's probably, I remember Mr. Rogers came to Lafayette College to speak at commencement. And so I remember writing him a letter thanking him for how much I loved his TV show. Mm. And I think I taped a lollipop to it. And, you know, and I just.
To coerce this grown man. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But I remember going, and I did give it to him after this commencement in Pennsylvania. That was sort of the first time that they, as hippie parents, may have seen me channeling them in terms of saying thank you to somebody who inspired me or touched me. And I think that, you know, I don't know that that's what they remember, but I remember that because I feel like that's something I remember from before, from the very beginning, is both of my parents were always very grateful for friends and teachers and mentors, and family and people who made their lives better. And I think that was probably the first time I maybe did that.
Was it Chris's first true expression of gratitude to a mentor? Let's find out.
I remember on the playground or something, I think he was, I don't know if he was third or fourth grade, but you know, that's when, especially the young boys, you know, they're trying to be cool and all that. And I think they were using some pretty horrific language, you know, and I don't know if it was a playground instructor or a teacher, but somebody was on the playground and told me, they didn't get involved, but you know, these kids were using this language, and Chris just said, you know what, there's so many you know, and he's a kid in his own language. There's so many beautiful words in our language. Just cut it out with that stuff, you know, something like that. And that made me feel good that he had the balls and the gumption at third or fourth grade to, you know, to stand up for what he felt was okay.
Oh my gosh. That's, I also love that your mom is like, there's so many more beautiful words, and I'm glad he had the balls to use them.
Right? Yeah. That was awesome.
That he had the cojones.
Exactly. Oh, that is really sweet to see you assert yourself in that way. And also, like, to have the confidence, the courage to do that. Do you remember that?
I think I do remember that. I feel like I've always hated bullies. And it's funny because I never used the word.
Before hate, it was so cool to hate bullies.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that very much came from my parents, as, you know, yeah. They would always stand up for the kid in class who was getting, you know, teased or whatever. And so I feel like I always had a little bit of confidence because I felt like I had them behind me. They had my back. And so I felt like I could sort of stick my neck out a little bit for maybe someone who didn't have that support that I had. So yeah, I do remember that.
That is really sweet though. And so was there a moment kind of contradictory to this where your mom remembers you being naughty? Oh, also we should say that 0 points. We did learn of beautiful memories that moments where your mom is proud of you, but they are worth nothing in the gamified version of this podcast.
Yeah, luckily I need no external validation anymore from my parents. So
there we go. Exactly,
you're fine. Fine. I'm going to say that at least probably the first big one where I remember getting the dreaded "I'm really disappointed in you" speech, which of course was much worse. That was the hippie version of spanking, which is like, oh, I'm so disappointed in you, which of course just broke my heart. And I'm pretty sure it was the time I went with a really good friend to the mall and bought non-alcoholic beer and bubblegum cigarettes that you could blow through and the powder on the side of the bubblegum would come out.
We took
that to a party at friend's house, and the parents called my parents and like, oh, they brought near beer and fake cigarettes and we're trying to be cool. And so I think that was probably it. And I remember I got a talking to.
Well, before we play what your mom said,
getting real beer.
I love that, like, you know, it's confusing to walk this line of being like, the kids from Greece are cool and we love all their music and we want to be just like them, but we can't act like them. We can only sing their songs.
Right.
That's so funny. I got busted for actual alcohol, and I'll never forget that feeling of walking in and all the alcohol was like laid out on that I had stashed was like laid out on the table, you know, like before the conversation, you just know, you're like, oh man, I am so boned.
Busted.
But I just imagine your version is like, there's just like O'Doul's and like a bunch of knockoff.
And gum.
And I was like, I literally was probably 11.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Okay. Let's hear what your mom said.
We were living in France for a semester. Jim had gotten a Fulbright with his teaching. And my daughter, she was pushing Chris a little bit too far. And finally, he just got this gum out of his mouth and mushed it in her hair. And she's saying, Mom! And I think my response was, good, you deserved it.
Oh, wow. That is naughty. That's real naughty.
Yeah, I remember that one well. But
that's unforgivable.
But she did say, because my sister was a disastrous pain in the butt when she was younger, and she's now the nicest person on the planet, in equal to my mom. But at the time, she was such a pain, and I remember my mom literally turned around and looked at my sister and looked her straight in the eye, and she's like, "You deserved it." And then we ended up just like trying to get it out with mayonnaise, and she eventually just cut that part of her hair out and just had to have it grow back.
That, oh my gosh, amazing. So
it was gum related, but yes, I don't think I'm sorry you don't get the point.
Yeah, but it's cool that she had your back in that way.
Yeah, that's kind of amazing. It's like you deserved it.
So now I'm just wondering, what's something you two disagree on now in adulthood?
It's little, but I think we probably are a little too loose with the what we ask of our kids in terms of keeping their rooms clean, or perhaps or perhaps sleeping in their own bedrooms and things of that sort. So we may be a little too open with the basic responsibilities of cleanliness and taking care of your own space.
All right, let's see if it's that you got a couple little pig pens.
His first child wasn't happy in the public school system, was having some issues and chatted with parents about wanting to go to a boarding school up in Idlewild. And I've changed my mind entirely on this. But at first I'm thinking, ninth grade, 13, 14 years old. You know, that was something that I really was having a lot of problems with. I don't know, these are such critical formative years that they need, but I also saw that Toby felt that maybe this environment would be better. Toby would be maybe more accepted and more free to be who he is. You know, I see a happier kid and a more productive kid, and I see the parents being happy. You know, it makes me happy to see Shannon and Christopher, not angsting over, a troublesome time in one of their children's lives.
So you knew what your kid needed and your mom was like, what are you doing? He's in ninth grade. You can't send him to boarding school. And you did?
Yes. And I didn't know. I mean, I knew she was probably worried about the thought of it. I didn't know she was like, thought it was the wrong idea, a bad idea. But yeah. So, I mean, Toby, my 15-year-old is trans. So Toby came out about 2 years ago and we had this amazing history in our family where this boarding school is. And we knew how accepting a place it was. And when he came to us and said, I really think I want to go to school there, not just, summer, but like, I want to go there. We were pretty open about it. Yeah. And I think maybe my folks were not so sure. It was great to take a kid who was literally just so depressed and then actually handing them off to other people. But I think we just knew that, that was the right place or could be the right place and that the local school was not for this particular kid. And so, I didn't know that it was maybe that much of a disagreement, but I think if you ask now, we all know.
Yeah. Sounds like she sort of came around. This is just like in the moment.
Yeah.
I'm curious about your, since you've gone through it as a parent with a child who's come out as trans, can you just speak to your experience from your point of view?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was very, very scary at the beginning before he came out and then right after he came out, because there was some real severe depression, clinical depression. And we didn't know how to help because Shannon and I are very open-minded and we certainly were not. Again, we weren't not supportive, but it still was DeSantis and Abbott and everybody were very vocal. And these are kids who are on social media, all the time. And they're seeing a lot of really horrible things being said about who they feel they are. We didn't know how to necessarily help right away other than just say, we started learning really, really fast and started reading and meeting with obviously doctors and counselors and all of that kind of stuff. But the last 2 years have been as my mom kind of said about going to we switched schools to a school where they can be exactly who they are. We have learned a ton and we've thankfully had amazing counselors and amazing doctors. And Toby and I made a movie together about a grandfather and his trans grandson, a short film. That's amazing. A musical and
incredible.
But even so many of the people who worked on the film were trans. And I've learned from every person that I've met more and more and more and how to be hopefully a better parent of every kid, but a better parent to a trans kid as well. And it was a week and a half ago, we went to a fall parents weekend and Toby sang a song, one of my favorite musical theater songs called Proud of Your Boy, which was written.
Oh my God.
If anybody listens to it, it wasn't in the film, but it was in the stage play of Aladdin. And it was Alan Menken, who I have thankfully worked with quite a bit. And I adore, and Howard Ashman wrote the lyrics, who wrote Little Mermaid and Aladdin and Beauty and the Beast. But halfway through Aladdin, you know, he wrote the lyrics to this song right before he told Alan that he actually had AIDS, and he ended up passing before the end of Aladdin. And it was all about his parents accepting him. And so there's this song, which is just if you know that, like, it's such a tearjerker of a tune. But here we are in this auditorium a week and a half ago, and we see Toby, who has now been on testosterone for about 6-8 months. He sings this as a tenor. And it's meant for a tenor voice, and Toby used to have a soprano voice, and quite honestly, you know, always had trouble finding pitch and everything like that. And I felt like it was, and also singing was always a very quiet singer. And so we're sitting in this auditorium, and all of a sudden the first three notes are played, and I know the song so well that I knew what was coming. So I started tearing up right away, and he starts singing, and he sings with no microphone, fills the entire auditorium, nails the pitch, nails the performance and the acting, you know. And I sent a text to Alan, who wrote the song, and I was like, he was meant to be a tenor the whole time. And, you know, it was the most, as a parent, you were talking, you know, I have to tell that story, because I think all of us, we want our kids to be who they are and feel confident and comfortable and content with who they are. And, you know, those of us, as we say in California, like those of us who've been therapized enough, I know that that's where like all of my baggage always came, because I was, the outside me was a little different than the inside me. And once I figured that out and realized that I didn't need to pretend and I didn't need to get the external validation I maybe thought I did, and I could be maybe more like my mom and dad were when we were growing up, I became infinitely happier and more confident. And I want that for my kids. As a parent, I think we all, you know, that's the sooner that we can have them discover that. And, you know, to have a 15-year-old kind of discover that in front of your very eyes 2 years after some really, really scary, dark times was magical. And it was something that, you know, as my mom said, like, there's no doubt in my mind that we went to the right place and we did the right thing. And that he's being exactly who he is and needs to be. And then our job is just to support that. That's all it is.
And how cool that one of the ways it was shown to you to be the most obvious is in your language of music.
What a way to have them feel so seen by you. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, by
an auditorium,
by the world, by an audience. What's the name of the film?
The name of the film we made?
Yeah.
So the name of the film we made is called Pacemaker. And it's a short film, and we premiered it Outfest in LA. And our awesome. Yeah. And our lead, who plays Cody, who's the trans grandson, is Alex Newell, who just won the Tony as the first non-binary performer to ever win a Tony for the musical Shucked this year. And Alex has an amazing voice, and he does the duet with Phil Lawrence, who is in Bruno Mars's band. And it's loosely based off of Toby and his grandfather, and then other filmmakers that we were collaborating with. And it's just goes to show, it's a film about just realizing that love is love, and that the sooner you accept your family for who they are, the more love you can have.
Bingo.
I'm so glad your mom brought that up.
Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think now would be our time to move into the lightning round.
Yeah.
And what is fun about the lightning round is that short answers. Okay. If you and your mom get the same answer, you get 2 stars.
So the point values are doubled. Right now, you're coming in with 3 stars. Don't worry. There's a lot of you know, potential stars out there for you. So,
Great. So
we know you've been really stressed out about this.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
All right. So first question we asked your mom is, what's your favorite color?
Red.
Green. No. Wine.
That counts.
Wine.
Red wine.
Yeah, we didn't say red or white, but that's okay.
That's true.
What is your favorite food as a child?
It's either lobster or tapioca pudding, and I'm going to go tapioca pudding.
Pasta, something Italian.
Oh, denying your own roots?
I just like food.
And then we asked your mom, what is Chris's favorite musical instrument?
It is cello.
Okay.
But I wonder if she'll say guitar because I play guitar, but it is cello.
The guitar.
Okay. We'll give it to you because you knew her.
I'm going to give her one.
Okay. I'll take one.
Okay, fine.
What is your favorite song?
Ooh. Well, obviously that's changed in the last 2 weeks, and I think I would say it's Proud of Your Boy, but I think back before...
Not something off that Van Halen album?
Yeah, I was going to say, she probably only knows like one Van Halen song. She's probably going to pick Jump, is what I would probably say.
The Mission, yes.
Oh,
Marconi, Chris and Shannon played it at their wedding, yeah. But also, I mean, he loved Duran Duran and Eddie Van Halen and all those songs. But that's aside.
Yep.
Okay, just because you mentioned Van Halen, I'm going to give you one star.
I'll take one. Okay. The opening theme from The Mission is definitely my favorite piece of film music. And my wife did walk down the aisle to it. And that's undoubtedly what I should have said. And I didn't think it was – I didn't consider it necessarily
a song. Yeah, you guys that's what happens when you go into your trade. You know, you get too specific on the verbiage.
I do love the idea of walking down the aisle to a score.
Yeah, that's badass.
That's pretty badass. Yeah.
Well, we walked down to that one, and then on our way out of the wedding, we walked out to the throne room piece from the end of Star Wars, the original.
Yeah,
that was a biggie. That was
pretty epic. Okay, we asked your mom what she thinks your biggest fear is.
Being alone.
Losing somebody that he loves.
Yeah. Those work together for me.
Mm-hmm.
What is your biggest irrational fear?
I say maybe drowning.
I'd say bears.
Bears.
Pears. You have a fear of pears? Elaborate.
Bears.
Oh, bears. Okay.
Pears? What kind of lunatic is afraid of pears?
I mean, I don't know. I don't know if something happened to you as a kid where you're just like sitting under a pear tree.
We did have a pear tree. We actually did. But she said bears because I did get attacked by a bear 3 years ago. I don't know if that's something you got on your internet search. But,
no.
No, wait, yeah. What? Yeah, and you survived?
Yeah. Look on socials. You'll see the bloodbath. Yeah. My 7-year-old daughter and I, 7-year-old at the time, who's now 10, we got attacked in South Lake Tahoe in the fall of COVID 2020.
Oh my gosh, this does not sound irrational.
Yeah, a bear broke into our cabin that we're staying at with two groups of friends. We had all tested for COVID, tested negative, and we went up for a week. And basically, the bear broke into our house, and I, with my daughter on my hip, encountered it and beat it with a broom, and it bit me, and I had stitches and all kinds of stuff.
Wow.
And yeah, and it was, but we both lived to tell about it. So
but you got it.
I'm not scared of them at all now.
That sounds like the short film you make with your daughter now.
That'll be
for
the other
real.
One. Yes, exactly.
Wow.
Gnarly. Okay.
Very gnarly.
Next question. Who was your hero as a kid?
I would say as a kid, I'd probably say my grandfather, my mom's dad.
I want to say my father, his Nanu, N-A-N-U, his Nanu.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, his Nanu. Okay, 2 stars for
amazing.
Sure.
Amazing. Yep, right on the nose. What is your favorite animal?
That's easy. Dog. Absolutely dog.
Dogs.
Dog.
Boom.
What's your worst habit?
Procrastination.
Too much of anything. If he goes shopping for something, a party or dinner, I mean, he will get enough for probably triple what he needs. So it's overindulgences of things.
That too.
Procrastination, though, that's a hard one as a person who has to self-generate a lot.
Yeah.
I know this is the lightning round, but like from one creative to another, how do you deal with it?
It's usually procrastinate and then like, because I am very ADHD, it's like procrastinate and then, oh my God, nobody can talk to me. I'm going to stay up till 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's sort of that. It's that.
Same.
Yeah. The binging of the time. Yeah. Well, you talked about it before a little bit, just in that like, see, I feel like it's unfair to call it procrastination. It's like, aren't you also waiting to be inspired to be able to create some art, to create music? So it's kind of, got bills to pay.
It's part of the creative process, but also there are ways to stimulate that kind of, quote, inspiration or stimulation. Mm-hmm. It's just that people with ADHD don't really do that on their own until the clocks run out. And I say this as somebody who also has ADHD.
The final lightning round question, you can get a point for each of these that you get correct or get a star for each of them. What are the three adjectives that best describe you, Chris?
Kind, driven, empathetic.
Loving, generous, hardworking.
Wow.
I mean, those are pretty synonymous, I'd say. Loving to kind, driven to...
Well...
Come on. I say 2 stars.
It's up to you guys.
All right, fine. Milana says 2 stars. She's in charge. Hey, look, you cleaned house here, okay? You got, you got 12 stars in the lightning round, which brings you to a total of 15 stars. Great work.
Not
you did it.
Bad, Mom, my friend.
And Chris is a podcast.
We appreciate you being here so much. And thank you for being so vulnerable about your family and teaching us to be better parents by modeling what that's like.
Oh, thank you.
It's very, very cool. And you know, just to see how the way you were raised shaped you into this very cool person. And now you're passing on those lessons to your children and making them cool people. It's very cool.
And it also
sounds like there are ways that you're making your parents better people by being the parent you are. You know, there's lessons that you're teaching them about acceptance and following their kids' guide or your kids' guidance. It's very inspiring. Really appreciate your
time.
Thank you. What did you think of this experience? What did you think of your mom's answers?
I thought it was great. I think it's funny because it's so her. She loved being a mom, and she just loved, you know, in a very sort of like hippie leftover, like family oriented way. She just, and by being a teacher, she just has that kind of like generous spirit. And she does, you know, I think she loves to talk about her kids. In fact, I know it. So, she loves to talk about her kids and grandkids. And I think, I think it's pretty awesome that we were able to do this together. So when I heard about this, I was pretty excited because I'm like, oh, this is the kind of stuff she lives for. So I'm thrilled that we could do this together and that you guys could meet her because she really, you know, she was the best mom.
Oh, wow. What an interview. That was wonderful. He lived up to every inch of that mohawk.
You know, it's cool to, and this is the thing that honestly has mattered to me so much in so many of our guests is it's, yes, your accomplishments are really cool. I am so stoked on all of your many awards and all of the cool credits and the people that you've worked with. However, the thing that I think is most cool about you is what a cool dad you are or what a cool mom you are. And
that he fought a bear with his hands,
yeah,
to save his daughter.
That's rock and roll, okay?
Like maybe the coolest trophy you have is the bear scar on your arm.
While holding your daughter? You know what? That's rock and roll. And then it's so picturesque. It's almost like such a movie moment, the way that his son showed him like love and gratitude was by singing Proud of Your Boy. And that I said this, but I think it's worth repeating that like he said it in Chris's language. Like, you know, Chris, I'm sure, has many languages, but like his professional language and part of his love language is music, and that his kid was able to express that through song. It's so epic.
Yeah. It goes to show the connection is what really matters and not anybody else's opinions about your child. It's like, can you maintain the connection in a really sincere way, no matter what or how your child wants to express themselves or navigate the world? And like that whole, when he talks about just like, I just have to be there. Like I just, all it's like, it makes the job so easy, like in a way, because it's not about the judgment and trying to push an agenda and trying to guide and shape. It's just like, just be a landing pad. That's what I'm taking home, you know, to no matter where or how my son wants to navigate this world. It's like, I just want to be a safe bouncy house for him to
to land in. Yeah.
To land in.
And he's like, he's fighting the fight just by being himself. I think that's also a part of like activism that, you know, he never referred to himself as an activist. He's definitely a philanthropist and gives a lot of his time to educational programs and things like that because he comes from educators. But it's cool for us to see models of people who are making the world better just by living their truth and loving their people.
100%. So if you want some more of these stories, then, you know, do the likes and the subscribes and the comments. That helps us out.
Smooth segue.
Very smooth.
Follow us, like us. Please like us. Please like us.
I'm nothing if not a shill, because I love doing these shows. I love doing these and hearing these stories. So you can help us out by following us on TikTok and Instagram at Your Mom is a Podcast. It's been lovely. See you next time, Bammit.
See you next time, motherfuckers.
Your Mom is a Podcast is hosted by Milana Weintraub and Sundeep Parikh. It is executive produced by Milana Weintraub, Sundeep Parikh, and Stephen Hine. Editing and sound design is by Sean Marr. Music by Matt Friedman. This podcast comes from F & Funny Productions and Story Mill Media. Be sure to follow the podcast on Instagram and TikTok at Your Mom is a Podcast.
Hi, Mom. It's your kid. I just finished our awesome podcast with these two amazing people. We had so much fun, and I got 15 stars, which is spectacular, I think. I actually know, I don't know, have no idea how many other stars the other people got. But since you weren't overly pushy, you and Dad weren't overly pushy about me accomplishing things anyway, 15 stars sounds great. It sounds perfect. I loved some of your answers, and I got reminded of some great stuff. And I am so happy to hear that that you're so proud of Toby, and we're happy that that they're where they need to be as well. So anyway, but I said you're the greatest mom ever on the podcast, and I'll say it again on the voicemail because I can't say it enough. So I love you, and you are the greatest mom ever. All right, bye.
School savings are officially in session at Tanger Outlets. Shop the latest school styles with an extra 25% off during Tanger Style, our biggest sale of the season, now through August 25th. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
This season, Instacart has your back to school, as in they've got your back to school lunch favorites like snack packs and fresh fruit, and they've got your back to school supplies like backpacks, binders, and pencils. And they've got your back when your kid casually tells you they have a huge school project due tomorrow. Let's face it, we were all that kid. So first call your parents to say, I'm sorry, and then download the Instacart app to get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes all school year long. Get a $0 delivery fee for your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.